If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of Mind Pump, the world's top fitness, health, and entertainment podcast, we answer fitness and health questions asked by listeners like you. We also have an introductory portion where we talk about studies. We mention our lives. We sometimes talk about our sponsors. So what I'm going to do is give you a breakdown of the whole episode. But before I do, I want to let all of you know that we have a free Hard Gainer class webinar that we're offering to everybody who has trouble building muscle. All you super fast metabolism people who don't seem to gain muscle or strength very easily. You eat whatever you want. Nothing's happening. You lift weights. Nothing's happening. You want to figure out why your body's not building muscle. Check out this class that I taught, and I break everything down. I give you everything you need to know to get your hard gainer body to response. It's at hardgainerwebinar.com. Okay, so here's what went on in today's episode. We open up by talking about the coin shortage. Again, I feel like this is a conspiracy, Justin. This is crazy.
Adam definitely felt the need to bring it up again.
Then I talk about maybe starting to run for exercise. I'm telling the truth here. I'm not making it
up. Don't hurt yourself, Sal.
We also talk about how the toy industry may be crumbling because the movie industry is not making any new movies to sell those toys. We talk about Roblox, Fortnite, and other games catering to virtual parties and hangouts. I talk about how micro-schooling is starting to become more popular. We mentioned one of our sponsors, Vuori, and how their performance jogger is getting mentioned all over the internet as being the most comfortable, best-looking joggers you could buy anywhere.
Truth.
By the way, Vuori, because we work with them, we have a discount code for you. If you want to check out their stuff and get 25% off, here's what you got to do. Go to vuoriclothing.com. That's vuoriclothing.com/mindpump. There's a code on that page for 25% off. Then I talk about how I've got 3 more months before my baby is here. That's nerve-wracking and exciting.
Sweating a little.
Then we talk about Adam's son's first steps. He's walking now. That's good. Good for you, Adam. Then we talk about the meat sticks that we love eating so much from Paleo Valley. These are grass-fed meat sticks. They're never dry. They're very delicious. Best snack you can find with the macros and in terms of health and quality.
Hands down.
And you can get 15% off because, you know, you listen to Mind Pump. Go to paleovalley.com. That's paleovalley.com/mindpump. Use the code MINDPUMP15 and get 15% off your first order. So that was about 40 minutes. Then we got into answering some questions. The first question, this person says, look, in following a full body routine, is it better to stick to the same exercises each time or alternate them with each workout? The next question, this person says, look, you guys often talk about eating a high-protein diet, but studies from the blue zones, these are areas of the world where people live a long time, show people eating low-protein. What's the deal? Should I eat high-protein or low-protein? The next question, this person is a personal trainer, wants to know how to pivot their business due to the fitness industry being hammered so much by COVID. And the final question, this person wants to fix their anterior pelvic tilt is where the butt sticks out, the core is weak, and the low back tends to have
Instagram model pic
some pain. Also, this month, MAPS Strong is 50% off. MAPS Strong is one of our best muscle building workout programs. Now, it's got conventional exercises, but it also has some unconventional strongman exercises. In other words, it's a fun muscle building routine. There is a special focus on the posterior chain, so back, butt, and hamstrings. So if those are areas you really want to focus on, get this program. It's also great for speeding up the metabolism because it is a potent muscle builder. The side effects of that is you burn more calories all the time just because you have more muscle, which makes being lean or getting lean much easier. Anyhow, it's half off. Here's how you get that discount. Go to mapsstrong.com, mapsstrong.com, and use the code STRONG50. That's STRONG 50, no space for the discount.
I'm going to beat you, Sal, to this.
Hey, wait.
What do you got to say?
Not much, actually. No, I do. I have a bone to pick. Remember With the guy who corrected Justin and I about the 30% overstatement.
Wait a minute. You reversed your stance, and now you're coming back. That's right.
This is not over.
Now I'm going to punk you, guy. You ready? So, you punked me in my DMs. I submitted. Now I'm coming back. I'm going to punk you on this. So listen to this.
Here we go.
We all know about the coin shortage going on, right?
Coin shortage, yes.
Yes. So to the, you know, it's so crazy that like Kroger's, like one of the largest grocery chains in the country, has literally put out a statement refusing to give back exact change.
What?
So yeah, you cannot go to that grocery store, and if you buy something for
is that legal?
I mean, I don't know,
dude.
I don't know how that works.
I feel like you have to give people money that's
they don't have it. There's that much of a shortage that there's
wow.
They just don't have coins.
So here's the bone that I have to pick.
They'll give you free candy instead or something.
So the guy who came back and corrected Justin, which he was right. It was not 30%.
Yeah, I thought it was you.
It was 17, right? Did I say 17% or 7% or
something
whatever?
Like that. It was less.
It was less.
You just pushed his mistake on me. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
All right, let's keep going.
Probably you gave me the advice in the first place.
Let's just glaze over it though real quick.
So there is actually a place in Wisconsin Community Bank. Okay, Wisconsin State Community Bank.
Okay.
Is giving 5%. For anybody who turns in their coins.
Oh, because of the coin shortage?
So, yes, that's right, buddy. So, you're giving up 17% of your coins to have some robot do it for you, or you could take the time to roll them yourself and gain 5% by turning your coins in.
Oh, how about them apples?
That's right.
Remember when I made
that, buddy?
Remember when I made fun of Justin for getting, you know, 50-cent pieces for mowing lawns?
Yeah.
Turns out
it was walking wiener dogs.
You could have made why just wiener dogs? Why not the other dogs?
It's just that's what was there.
Was that in your wiener stage?
it's a wiener phase.
Wieners everything.
Yeah, a specialty.
Yeah. Yes,
I do. I own one now.
He took that like whole thing about niching down your business real seriously.
His trapper keeper had wieners.
Focus on wieners.
Drawn all over it.
Yeah, I was just drawing, and I'm like, it was just my whole life.
Yes, you just see him door to door trying to get dogs.
Wiener town. It's so fun.
Hi, I like to walk wieners. So anyway, you would have made 5% extra now because you could have turned in your coins to the Wisconsin bank and gotten 5%.
I'm excited.
I should have waited.
I feel like this coin shortage is all part of the New World Order agenda to remove money into.
I thought we weren't talking about
more conspiracies. Can we get a podcast up this week without getting
it's the Illuminati?
I'm telling you. No, I don't know. I'm just kidding. I'm joking. That's weird, though, right? To have a shortage.
True, yeah.
Of coins?
It's really not that weird. So many businesses are shut down, which you're gonna see that.
What if there's a cash shortage next?
Ooh. Well, there will be. I mean, isn't that inevitable?
Yeah.
Because right now what's happening is how many people, my friends and I were just talking about this weekend when we were hanging out, that they were like, dude, when was the last time you used cash to buy something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're still making purchases right now, first of all, a large portion of the country is probably scaling back on spending money right now. You know, I think everybody's starting to go like, okay, maybe I should be a little more conservative about my spending. So you're already spending less. Then you're not going out to places. Even if you are spending, you're spending from home.
Mm-hmm.
If you're spending from home, there's no cash exchange whatsoever. This is all Venmo. This is all, you know, credit cards online. So
plus the printers are not printing as much because they don't have as many workers working like they normally do. That was part of the problem too, apparently.
Dude, so the last time I spent one, I bought a Lucha Libre mask.
With the you wanted to
just,
do it?
Yeah.
You got the black market mask?
Yeah, that was your last.
That was my last time I used cash.
Ooh,
really?
Yeah.
Solid.
My
purchase.
Last purchase.
So. Yeah, I like cash. I don't know. I like cash because
how dirty it is.
It's
all the cocaine remnants you can get from it.
Wow, you guys are terrible.
What? It's true.
No, I like it because
cocaine and caca.
It's there. You know what I mean? It's there. It's yours. It's in your hand. And
didn't they originally come out and say that was like one of the worst or one of the best ways that best ways not the right word for that. Let's use it though to COVID to transfer.
Oh,
transmit
cash
to somebody else. Yeah, because the exchange of cash is how dirty cash is.
You know what?
Back when they thought it was all transferable from surfaces.
Well, here's the other thing too. It's cash is how a lot of people avoid paying taxes. You know, they do jobs for cash and then they end up not reporting it or whatever. You eliminate all cash. Essentially, the government is thinking that they're going to automatically have collect more taxes because now, you know, they can trace your whatever you're doing for cash, they can now trace easier. Enter Bitcoin, huh?
Ooh.
Yeah, that's the answer to some of that in that regard or whatever.
I still believe we're going that way.
You think so?
I don't spend a lot of time messing watching it anymore. But
I wonder if it's up. I bought. Remember when you and I bought some?
Oh yeah. I just worry about everything being electronic. You know, there's still that potential that, you know, as far as like my conspiracy brain goes, where they can mess with the internet and they can mess with, you know, the EMPs could knock out all power. And then what? What are we going to exchange with? We'll go back to barter system with goats?
Yeah. I love Justin so much.
Yeah. First thing that comes to his mind. Goats. We should start a goat farm, dude.
Just goats, you know? Like, that used to be the currency.
Mind pumps invest in a goat farm.
Dude, I need to, I might start doing something really crazy. Soon. I might start running a little bit.
Like stop, cardio?
Yeah, stop. Yeah, like running, stop.
You're just trying to get laughs in the podcast.
No.
Is this because all the montages you've been watching?
No. Oh, you mean the Rocky montages?
Yeah.
Oh, those are so good. No, here's why, okay? I caught myself doing this the other day. I don't remember what I had to like move fast for, but I had to kind of move fast to get somewhere. And it was a short distance. It was like from here to...
Like 10 feet.
Yeah, I was like, no, maybe 20, 30 feet, right? Yeah. And you know what I did? I did the old man jog. Do you know what I'm talking about? You ever seen the old man jog? The old man jog, the legs don't really move faster, but the upper body does.
Upper body twists. Yeah. The legs are just...
Dude, I did that.
Like a video game?
Yeah, I did that when my arms were doing this and my legs were still walking. And I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, you're not moving fast.
I need to run or I'll forget how to run. This is terrible.
It's a lost skill.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I always think about that. I don't want to lose like my ability to jump and like, you know, cut and turn and do all, like, dude. If I don't have my athleticism, who am I?
You do represent that for us. That's why I feel like I can slack off on it a little bit.
So yeah. Justin can move.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't ever lose that because then we're screwed.
I feel like as long as that's together, we can accomplish whatever fitness task
that's
out there.
Oh, I remember
we
what I was
somebody
running.
Somebody to, you know, show the example.
I remember why I was running. I had to pee hella bad, like really, really bad. And then I made it to the bathroom and pee, which by the way, I don't know of a more is there anything more satisfying than peeing after you've been holding your pee for way too long?
I mean that noise immediately is like a you can't help but do that.
Yeah, it's like an incredible. That's why I did the fake run though. It's because I was gonna pee myself on accident.
So are you like treadmill running or are you gonna run the pavement like old school?
I don't know how I'm gonna start this. I feel like I'm gonna start by running like 5 steps every day. And then I'll increase it to 10 steps. No, I don't know. Honestly, what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to get myself some running shoes and then maybe do like a mile, you know, here and there, which I haven't run a mile in a long time. No idea what that's going to be like.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this another excuse to get you New Balances?
Yeah. They're comfortable.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
No, I try and do that at least every month or 2 months. You've said that before. Yeah, yeah. I'll get on the treadmill and just make sure that I can, right? I mean, that's kind of what the
idea. What do you do, a mile?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, I'll run, sometimes longer, just depends on the mood. I feel like after the, once I hit like a 10-minute mark of running, it's actually really, it's almost therapeutic. I enjoy it. You get that runner's high. It takes about 10 minutes for me, for the first like sweat that you break. And then I'll do it. You know, it's just something I do intermittently. It's not something I do consistently every single day. And it is for the exact reason what you just said. I don't want to lose that. I don't want if and when I need to take off for a sprint, or I just don't see any other time or where it could be possible that I would need to run further than a mile. As long as I can run a mile efficiently and get there pretty quick and outrun my child, I feel pretty good.
Outrun? Yeah. Oh, so you catch
Dad!
Them. Yeah, yeah. Yo, oh, dude. Little kids will do that. My nephew, Jessica and I were watching my nephew, and he's a little shit, man. Like, he'll look at you, and the second he knows he's far enough to take off, he goes. So we were in San Mateo downtown, and we were hanging out with him. This was before COVID or whatever. And, you know, I'm holding his hand. He's a little, and again, he's a smart little kid, right? So he's holding my hand, being a good little kid or whatever. And then he, like, tries to pull his hand away. And I said, no, I got to hold your hand because the street's over there and there's cars. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I know run. And so I said, okay, I'm going to give you a chance to walk or whatever. So he walks in front of me and he's walking and he's looking to the left and to the right. And then I see him kind of peek back and I have a feeling like this.
He's going
to
bolt.
Does. He bolts.
No.
Yes. Boom. And then I chase him. And what do you think he's doing the whole time?
Laughing.
He thinks it's the funnest thing in the world. And he's heading right for the intersection.
Dude, what is that? Yeah. Like, that was the one time like my youngest like drove me completely insane. And it was in a parking lot like that. I'm like, stay right here, you know, like, please, you know, stay close to Dad. And then just took off, and then a car pulls out like right in front of him and barely gets. Oh my God! Like my heart stopped.
I've got an interesting conversation around kids and money since we just were talking about those two things right now. Check this out. You know, we talk about all these unintended consequences from the shutdown and what's happening, and this is one that like wasn't even on my radar that I would have thought of. And let's see if you guys can piece this together. So. Think of some of the things that are going to affect major businesses of movies being shut down. So movies are shut down, right? All right. Summer, it's already been said, summer's canceled and not happening.
Yeah, which has sucked.
Which hurts the movie industry. That's obvious, right? So if you're a movie theater, you know, or produce movies, whatever, that's obviously going to affect them. But with children that's that industry, what do you think it's going to cripple?
So hold on a second. Because there's no movies.
That's right.
And in regard to kids, what's that going to cripple? I don't know. Popcorn?
Toys.
Oh.
Merchandise. So listen to this.
That's right.
The toy industry figures that movies, summer blockbuster movies, are responsible for 21% of their revenue, which adds up to over $20 billion.
And there's no movies to drive the toys.
And it gets worse.
Man.
All that stuff was planned. So all the toy companies have made all these toys for all the blockbuster movies that were supposed to come out.
And they're just sitting in a warehouse.
They're just sitting in warehouses. So now what do you do? Kids aren't going to buy toys of movies they've never seen before. So there's all these toys that have been made to sell to kids from these blockbuster movies that were supposed to come out in summer that are like sitting in warehouses or about to get shipped out to places like Target. And now Target has they have to decide, do we want to receive these, put them on our shelves, or try and store these and sell them next year when they potentially release this movie?
I didn't even think of that.
Neither did I.
Dang.
It's totally true because movies drive a ton of those sales.
21% they attribute a quarter of toy sales is because of movies.
Yeah.
And with no movies, talk about...
Wow, that makes a perfect sense. That's interesting. I would wonder then if there's a big push by these video game companies to, you know, get into the merchandising part of that to kind of make up for that shelf space.
You're talking about video games. Here's a pivot that all video games are starting to do right now. A company called Roblox, Fortnite, some other chasing game. I forget what the name of the app was. They're all trying to figure out, okay, gaming is blowing up, is going like crazy right now because everybody's at home. Now, how do we hear our audience and find other ways to, get more attention, which they're already getting a ton of. So now they're all pivoting into like these virtual parties and virtual birthday parties within the game. So that kids can all get together, like community, and hang out and purchase things in app and do things together. And so they're all catering to
That's interesting. I've seen, because my kids will play, you know, and like in Roblox, they have like areas where you can actually like have your own food cafeterias where people come in.
Oh, so you're familiar with
foods,
that game?
All that stuff. Oh yeah.
Oh, so I'm not familiar with that game.
Oh yeah.
That's article. One of those. I'm like, I'm monitoring it constantly to see who's like hitting them up because
they could talk to each other,
dude.
I don't like that.
Again, here's the other part of it: is all the the catfish like pedo dudes out there that are in that's like. It draws where all the kids are, is where it draws.
Is that a real thing in that? Right? Is that?
Oh, yeah,
sure. They'll message them and everything.
They pose as like another 7-year-old.
Yeah. Now, is that you guys just saying that because you've heard that, or have you guys experienced that with your own kids?
Oh, I haven't seen it with my kids.
My kids
legit.
Tell me, like, they look out for it. Like, I have them, like, we talk about
it. So they're
it a
aware
lot.
Of, like,
they're
catfishing.
Aware.
They know what that is.
If they don't know who it is, even if they, because they approach them, like, really nice and, like, you know, try and, like, do all this extra stuff for them. Give them all these things, and then it's so nice. I'm like, who is? I don't know who this is. Okay, you got to get out, and like get in a different area and like drop this guy.
Yeah, do you guys remember the first like toy that you bought that was based off of like a movie or TV show that you loved? Do you guys remember that?
G.I. Joe,
Star Wars.
Oh, you guys are. Oh yeah, of course you had Star Wars. Did you have a whole bunch of them?
Oh my God, I had like action figures.
Still does,
I still
bro.
Have them. Still does. You see that picture I had?
That's why I call him. I FaceTime him. I catch him playing.
He only uses them during
sex. What are you doing, bro?
Princess Leia.
Oh, the wife isn't home right now, playing with my Star Wars toys.
You're my sister. This is weird. Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah.
Did you have
that one on us?
Did you have the Millennium Falcon and all that stuff?
Yeah, dude. I had the Millennium Falcon. I had AT-ATs. I had like.
Aren't those worth money?
I mean, I played with them though. You know, like I didn't like have them all like,
aggressively too,
dude. But it's like, who buys toys and just keeps them in the packaging and puts them on the shelf and is like it's like some kind of weird like trophy.
Did I ever tell you I had a friend in high school that used to collect all the McDonald's toys, and he kept them in the plastic, and he had this massive bag. Those are actually worth it.
I know.
I guarantee that's worth
money. They have like a McDonald's Beckett that has all the toys and how much. And I would love to know where this
so many Hamburglers.
Yeah, this is like my freshman year in high school, my friend, and I have no idea where he is at in life now and what he's doing. I wish I knew because I'm just curious about that stash because he had probably thousands. And all in the plastic.
I had a friend who had He-Man and Castle Grayskull.
Oh, yeah.
All sick. In the box, untouched, and he sold it for $1,000 or $2,000.
Really?
Like yeah.
Wow.
But again, I'm like, Justin, what kind of a weird kid are you if you get a toy and you leave it in the box and never touch it?
Okay, I feel this way about a community that I'm very familiar with is the sneakerhead community. And there's a lot of money to be made in these sneakers. But that's how I justify spending my money on them is because they're valued like that. But that's not what makes, like, I don't buy my sneakers and just like put them away. Mm-hmm. So they hold value. And then there's kids that make big money in that. In fact, I was reading an article the other day about some of the ways that kids are making. There's this like 15-year-old kid that buys like 50 pair of sneakers every month and then he holds them for a little while, then flips them and sells them and makes a ton of money doing that. The whole reason why I buy my sneakers is because I want to wear them. So I wear mine. And I think it's the same thing. It's like you buy those things because you like them, you want to play with them.
They're also
them.
Functional.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, sneakers are very functional, so I want to wear them. But I know, you know, in the sneaker world, they still hold value. I mean, I can still sell
them. You can still wear somebody else's shoes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. If you take good care of them and you keep them in like, you know, reasonable condition, and if you have a collection like I do where you rotate through,
I feel like that's kind of weird to wear someone else's
shoe. I'm like
their
thinking,
foot's been in there.
Well, I'm thinking about the weirdos with the fetishes, you know, that like smell like, oh yeah,
this, I mean, what's
Adam,
what do you hey, once you sell, what do you give a shit? I don't care if you hump my shoe, you know what I'm saying? Do whatever you want with my shoes, like they're not mine anymore.
Bother you anymore?
No, like, it doesn't bother me. Like
There are some weirdos.
Maybe like those weirdos will pay more for them. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, like, I guarantee it. Yeah, you know, make them extra funky. You know, I did some crazy workout.
That's
in these.
Gross. Yeah. Whatever. That's gross. No, when I was a kid, I had a lot of He-Man. He-Man was the ultimate toy, and He-Man beat the crap out of everybody. G.I. Joe beat the crap.
He had
out of
the best pecs.
He was. Yeah. It was, you know what they did? I mean, if you look at it, literally, they took a pro bodybuilder and made it into a figurine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you wonder why I had body image
issues. Like
Conan.
This
is my toy when I was a kid. You know, I don't look like him at all.
Yeah.
He's so powerful. Do you remember his punching action? You just twist his body and then he just untwists.
Oh my god!
Just like this. Yeah, I remember.
Speaking of kids, you know what's exploding right now? They call it micro schooling. So micro schooling is where parents get together. Like four or five parents of kids who are close or whatever.
Yeah.
And then one of the parents will host the kids and do education.
This is the future.
At home. And then they'll kind of rotate from home to home or whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of parents are doing
that. So we're actually like structuring that in our community right
Same.
Now.
Same.
Yeah.
So I have a call with my best friend later on today, who's the principal of a high school. And this is our exact conversation and topic because he wants to start a podcast and he wants to center it around helping those types of parents.
Oh, that's brilliant. Blowing up.
I know.
That is definitely going to be the way people are going
to
handle this.
So I used to train clients who were huge in the homeschool community. Their son had a terrible experience in school. They took him out and they were retired, very successful, tech executives. And they worked for a company that went public and they were able to retire. So they had all this time to dedicate to really studying and understanding education and homeschooling, all that stuff. And, you know, they told me, they said, you know what's funny? They said, the minute parents realize it's not as hard and crazy as you think and that there's all the resources, all these crazy resources, the minute they start to realize that and they get over that learning curve, they're never going to go back.
Yep.
So they're saying basically this spike is probably going to stay permanent or close to permanent because once people get the hang of it and get over that learning curve of the schedule and what does it look like, what are the resources and what are the state requirements for testing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you get over that, they're like, yeah, no one's. They're not going to go back. Yeah. They're going to see how much, better.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for them to figure out the whole sports and Little League and all that kind of stuff and like how we're going to handle that with, with the kids and maybe like no fans or anything, but they just have these outdoor events where they can still play. Because, I mean, sports is such a vital part of, growing up and developing as a kid.
Well,
and
it's also massive business. Once you get to the collegiate level, it's massive. So just because of that, that's being figured out. There's no way.
Of course,
my buddy was talking about that too. And I'm like, I don't even think about that or worry about that because that is such
there's big, too much money.
There's so much money in that, that right now I guarantee 80% of like college's focus is around that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they know that is the biggest money driver of everything. And I think that's just what we're going to see. I think like in this, we had this debate back and forth, my buddy who's the principal and I over the weekend of like, because I've been saying for, a couple of years now that I think education is going to be completely shook up. And, he would debate that with me all the time. And now he's kind of like, okay, well, I didn't see this COVID thing happening and this is really shaking everything up.
Right.
He's all, but I still don't think it's going to completely get shaken up because of sports. And I was like, I disagree again. I think that it's just going to evolve and be different. Mm-hmm. We already have examples of non-school related sports. There's rec leagues. I've played in rec leagues my entire life growing up. And it's community driven and organized, and so
Sandlot style.
Yeah, you're just gonna have that for groups of people and towns, and they'll be able to compete against other. I don't think it's gonna be that hard to organize that for the only reason why you don't see it that popular now is the homeschool community is not large enough.
Mm-hmm.
But if you guys all believe we're gonna see a large percentage go that way, then it's going to
be. Well, the homeschool community,
I guarantee it,
oftentimes does put their kids in extracurricular sports and activities. So it is very big with them. And they'll sign up for leagues or for clubs or whatever for activity or for sport. Because it's very important. It's not just important for physical I think health. It's good for mental health.
Team building, learning to work with others.
I think it's going to be better, right? I mean, I think we all agree. We're all kind of lean towards free market, and that's what this is doing, right?
It's forcing everybody.
Forcing everybody into that. And I have faith in humanity and the ability for us to come together, organize, and figure things out better than allowing government to dictate.
It's definitely the silver lining. I think I appreciate the fact that it's disrupting this whole thing that I think needed to. Be disrupted. It needs to be looked at and done differently. And I think that this is an opportunity we can take now to really make a massive change.
Well, there's pressure. The pressures on education before to change were mainly in the higher education because the cost of college had far exceeded inflation, just exploded. And it started to get to the point where people were questioning, was it worth a degree? Is it worth a degree to go into debt? Tens of thousands or $100,000. Well, I guess it depends on the degree, and people are doing that. People were doing that for a while, so there was that pressure. There was that strong signal. But now we have the very strong signal of COVID, where it's not an option. It's not an option to send your kid to school in the traditional sense. So of course people are going to start looking at other things. And I think the same thing. I think once people start to see what that looks like, and now that there's a big market demand for it, you're going to start to see some innovation and some market solutions.
Yeah.
And here's the truth. I mean, especially in a modern economy, you're largely valued for your specialized skill, not for your broad general skills. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you do a job, it's because you're really good at a one or two things, not because you also understand algebra and history and English or all those other things. So that specialized
ornamental horticulture,
whatever, that specialized knowledge and information is just, it's more valuable. And I predict that the market's going to play more to that, where, okay, here's your state standards, you got to pass the test, but now let's get you to specialize in the stuff that you enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very good thing.
So if that's all true, do you think that teachers are going to be in a very similar situation as personal trainers are right now?
I think teachers are always, there's always going to be a demand for teachers. But I think the way that they're going to deliver their
education, so that's just like we were giving out the notice on trainers like a year ago, even before COVID hit, that the future of training is, you need to build this kind of virtual model to support your business because it's moving in that direction.
the same thing I think goes for teachers. And, you know, even if you're tenured and your job is set and you think and you feel confident in that, if that space is really going to evolve and change,
I'd be working on that right now.
Right. I think this is the time to be thinking about that. It was just really cool to see my best friend and his brain working that way and seeing that, oh, you know what, this moving into this podcast space, trying to provide value for these educators that are now going to be educating at home or in like micro groups, like you're saying, I think is going to have tremendous value if he can become a voice in that space. And because he's an authority already mm-hmm. in that position with lots of experience, man, I think that's a brilliant.
I think it's an opportunity.
A huge opportunity.
Yeah. If I'm a teacher right now, I'm going to be looking at ways I could deliver, good information to kids or to my students via internet technology.
Yep.
I'm going to be looking at
or to parents. Right. Assist the parents that are actually going to be doing and your job in a sense at home. And no one knows better than you. You've been doing it for possibly mm-hmm. years or decades, mm-hmm. and so you have a great perspective to help evolve them instead of fighting it and resisting it and hoping it doesn't go that direction. You know, pivot and go, okay, I'm going to try and help all those that go that direction and build yourself a potential business.
Now, if it does go this way, what'll end up happening, like anything else, it's going to get very competitive. You're going to have a much smaller role in government, obviously, because public school either is going to have to drastically change or they're going to change the way they deliver education. So there may be a gap there. Between no public school and people going to the market for solutions, mm-hmm. It's going to get very competitive. Meaning, the good teachers are going to get very successful, and then the ones that aren't so good are probably going to have a tough time.
Right.
Making a living.
It's a hard transition
because it's going to be so damn competitive. Speaking of competitive, you guys all know that the athleisure wear market is huge, right? It's a huge market.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually growing right now because people are home.
Working from home.
And they like to wear, comfortable clothing that kind of looks good.
Yeah, it's not business attire anymore.
Right. So Vuori, for the audience doesn't know, Vuori is a company we work with. They make athleisure wear, really, really nice stuff. Some of the best stuff that we found anywhere. Anyway, their performance jogger, which is one of our favorites.
That's what I'm wearing.
Yeah. Performance jogger is amazing. It's got 4,000 reviews on their site, and there are the last I checked, over a dozen blogs written specifically about their performance jogger.
Wow.
That they're ranked as the best, the most comfortable, leisure wear pants anywhere. And they compare them to like all the big brands and,
it's
like
crazy.
Like Lulu and all that
stuff.
Well,
I think of them as the male version of Lulu. And just like the opposite, Lulu did. Like Lulu established himself in the yoga female community really well. They grew that brand. They've now branched into, they've been doing menswear for a while and have made themselves a niche in that market. But then you had like Vuori, who saw that they catered first to the women. They kind of catered first to the men athleisure wear and then have branched into women and have a line that's amazing for women and for men.
Yeah.
And they also did it the opposite way of, instead of going brick and mortar first and then going digital, they were all direct to consumer first and scaled rapidly because they did not have a huge overhead. And now you see them popping up all over the place, which is really cool.
I'd be interested to see how, too, it's been filtering in. To these more formal type settings too, because like I wear the Meta pants, which the Meta pants are more like slacks, but they're like super stretchy. It's almost something you'd wear probably on the golf course. Mm. But they're so comfortable and everything, but you could actually pass it off. Like I could go to a wedding and wear those. Like I feel.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I want to see you at a wedding with your
I'm joggers. Not the most classy guy in the world.
One of the reasons that, Lulu blew up was because that was what ended up happening.
Yeah, you could wear workout clothes anywhere.
Yeah, and that's what has happened. And uh-huh. They created a space. Athleisure wear wasn't even a thing a decade ago. Yeah. It's now
Before that, sweats were like, you wore sweats at home and nobody saw you.
You'd be teased. That'd be a joke right now. If you showed up to
old school sweats?
Yeah. Showed up to work or showed up to an airport or public
at home
places.
Or at the strip club, right?
Yeah, wow. somebody would... Whoa, dude.
I'm just saying.
Whoa, guy.
Is that true? I think that's true, right? All the dudes are in like sweat, like yeah, joggers.
Come on, you never heard that? Whatever. You guys.
Now they can look somewhat dressed up a little bit. Wow, you found it. Maybe you found a market, dude.
I'm telling you.
I wonder if we should call Viore and let them know if they're targeting that, right?
The guys who go to strip clubs. Sad guys who go to strip clubs. You see pop-up tents now at your local strip club. Hey, do you guys remember the old, when we were like, you know, kids, right, working out, and the workout clothes that you had back then were essentially like, you know, they were sweats, like the ones you see like Sylvester Stallone wearing Rocky, the gray sweats and the gray hoodie or whatever. Do you remember how terrible those things were to work out in?
Oh, yeah.
You'd sweat in them and that was it.
It's like Swamp Thing.
Dude, they were disgusting, dude. And you had to wash them immediately or they would smell forever. Like the worst things in the world.
Most guys wouldn't because they're disgusting.
Dude, so time flies, man. We are moving into the last trimester.
Oh, I saw the picture of Jessica. Wow. She looks great, dude.
She's really doing a really good job.
Has she had an overall good experience? You know, I feel like it's 50-50 with pregnancy for women. Like some women just say it's the
and
most.
And some just aren't really honest about it either. They want to like portray this like, oh, it's so great and everything. And then, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, meanwhile, the husband's being tortured at home.
Giving you the real facts.
Get over it, like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Like, I'm throwing up and
ripped my face off so like 2 hours ago.
You know what, though? You know, I'll say this. So, she would tell you right now that she's loves it and is sad that it's going to be ending soon. That being said, the first trimester was challenging. The first trimester, she was super exhausted, nauseous all the time. And the poor girl was stuck on the couch half the time because she would move and get super exhausted or want to throw up. Her favorite foods all of a sudden became foods that were repulsive. Like, Jessica loves meat. She could totally go on a carnivore diet and be happy. She loves steak. She loves ground beef. She likes it cooked rare. It's her favorite food ever. Just the smell or even just saying the word meat to her in the first trimester made her want to gag. So that was a bit of a challenge. But then she went into her second trimester. Way more energy, feeling good. She looks really, really healthy.
Has she been able to reintroduce all those foods that she
had? Oh, yeah. Even then, she was like figuring out ways to eat those things because of the valuable nutrients, you know, that you want to get with them. And, you know, evolutionarily, it makes sense, right? I think, you know, your body probably is so hypersensitive to prevent foodborne illness. And so, you know, processed foods or white, you know, like bread and crackers, your brain probably sees like, oh, this is very, very safe. Meat, you know, might have something in it. And so it's like better safe than sorry type of deal.
It seems like their cravings too a lot of times are foods that like they haven't been introducing in their diet for a while. Like that's how it was with Courtney. Anyway.
Yeah, Katrina was that. Katrina, I told you guys that she went bananas with oranges.
Yeah.
Orange slices. Like that was like her thing.
I remember she you
was
saying that.
First of all, I never saw her eat orange slices when we were together the previous 9 years. And then all of a sudden, it became this thing where she was like crushing whole oranges.
Apples with watermelons. It was crazy.
Jessica has tomatoes. Here's a funny thing. She hated tomatoes before. Never ate them by themselves. Mm. Now she's making, you know, 2 or 3 caprese salads every single day. And I pointed that out to her. And she's like, that's not true. And I'm like, when's the last time you ate a tomato? She's like, oh, yeah, this is kind of weird. But yeah, now we're heading into the third trimester, which means I got 3 more months, and then I have a little baby.
I'm
gonna be a dad again, which is this is a different experience for me than my other kids because my kids are older. You know, I've had enough time now. They're, you know, my youngest is 10, and so I realize looking back how unpresent I was, how much I was, you know, moving and hustling, trying to, you know, make money and whatever, and I just wasn't as present as I could have been. So this time I'm really going to pay attention.
So you think it's more excitement, less like fear of the unknown, obviously, because you've been through it.
Way more excitement and calm. Yeah. I'm very calm about, you know, the whole thing.
So. Has this also given you more appreciation for your ex?
You mean for what she went through?
Here's the thing. Like you have 2 incredible kids. I mean, you guys are pretty close to Leave It to Beaver family. Mm. Pretty close. I mean, aside from obviously you guys are divorced. The children have turned out incredible, well-mannered, very intelligent, great, great kids, healthy, all the above, right? And you admit that you feel like you were nowhere near as present in their lives, and she really took over. And now seeing how well they've been raised, and I mean, that's got to give you a different outlook on her and appreciation.
Yeah, so I was involved in the sense that, you know, I love them, I hugged them, I kissed them, they knew their dad loved them. I would, you know, I was there for, you know, weekends we would spend together, I'd have dinner with them often. But what I mean by present is it's more of a state of mind. Like you're ever somewhere and you're just kind of thinking off. Like when I would watch my kids sometimes they would be playing and I would be reading or thinking or just not present,
worried about getting clients
or something, right? Yeah. You know, or you know, I'm on, you know, social media trying to figure something out. You know, this time I'm going to be present, because some of the stuff you think is like not that big of a deal, like, oh, my kid's playing with his toys, like he does that every single day. Then when they grow up and you think about it, you're like, man, I wish I really watched and paid attention and cherished that moment. So
I think a lot of that is you know, less of probably that you made any sort of a mistake, because I don't think you made any mistakes with them, and more just being older and wiser.
Of course.
Because I haven't had any kids, and I'm very cognizant of that, like being around for moments.
You
and
are.
And I make a point to be very, very present with him, and I don't ever do anything distracting when it's my time with him. I'm not, my phone goes in a different room. I don't like watching TV. Like,
way more wise. No, that's 100%, dude. Think about when you were in your 20s if you had a kid.
Nah, yeah. My mind would be. Yeah,
you would have been good dad. You would have been a bad father.
Yeah, I would have figured things out. Like you probably did. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I would have figured things out. I think I would have still raised a pretty good kid. But there's just another level of appreciation that I have now for this phase that he's going through and being a part of that. You know, I told you guys off air, he walked, right? So he took his first steps, and it was such a crazy moment because the conversation that we had right before. So this trip up here was unplanned on a whim. We all just said, let's go up to the Tahoe house, let's just go record. And so we all uprooted and left this week. And so I like came home and told Katrina, I'm like, hey, we're gonna go up and work for a few days at the house. And she goes, okay, you know, do we have this covered? That yeah, everything's all fine. And she made this like comment, because he's getting close to like walking. She's like, oh, what happens if you miss like his walking? I was like, my son would never do that to me. I said, my son, I've been so present and a part of everything and helped get him to crawl, and I'm going to help walk him. And, you know, I like to be that person that is kind of constantly challenging. Katrina is the very loving, nurturing, supporting him all the time. I'm the one that's kind of manufacturing adversity already at a young age and trying to challenge him to take another step or crawl a little bit further or do things on his own and let him struggle a little bit. And so I was like, I feel confident that I'm not going to miss that. And so I was spending time with him before we took off and, you know, practicing walking and trying to challenge him. And she was down in the basement or the garage area and doing laundry. And so, you know, him and I came down stairs with her, and I sat at the bottom of the stairs, and we had these 5-gallon jugs. And you know, he stands up, sits down on his own, and he's like right there, right? Like there's moments where he'll get distracted with something in his hands and not realize he's not holding himself up.
He's not scared because he doesn't realize.
Yeah, exactly. He's not scared. He's like standing there doing stuff, and then he'll squat down and then he'll pop right back up. And I'm like, dude, he can walk. I know he can walk. He's just got to get there. And so he's doing this. And on the other side of the garage is his new, you know, Range Rover remote control car thing, right? And he looks, he sees it from the 5-gallon tank, and you know, Katrina's doing laundry and she's watching him, and I'm sitting on the stairs and I'm just watching him. We're paying attention to him, and because he's so caught up in the moment, he just takes off and walks across the garage.
I want this over
the thing. And it was like both of us are like staring at each other, because we literally 15 minutes before that had this conversation.
Now did you scream?
I screamed out of excitement and scared the shit out of him.
He's not going to walk for another 6 months.
I know. It's like, he's definitely not walking anymore while I'm gone for this week. I was so ecstatic that I yelled at my poor dude.
How many steps he get?
It was like
he went all the way.
Yeah, he walked across the garage. He took 8 to 10 steps. Oh, it was awesome. Not like he's already been doing these little, like I was doing it the night before, I was with him during bath time. And so part of our routine is, you know, Katrina will be kind of getting dinner ready for us while I'm playing with him right before bath time, and I get his bath ready. And a lot of times I'll let him kind of, you know, play around in the bathroom and open drawers and do things. And he was standing opening a drawer, and he turns around and the bath is to his left, and he just took like 2 steps to the bath and he grabs it. So he's been doing that already for a little bit.
But not like a walk.
Not a walk. This was like a full-on standing up, let go of the five-gallon thing, saw his toy, realized it, and just made effort
to
go.
And he had no idea why you guys screamed. Yeah. He's probably like, huh?
Yeah, it was exactly that. He looked so back cute. At me, started crying because I yelled. But what a cool moment, and so random right after he said that.
Yeah, you know, you speaking of cool moments, you know, through this process of Jessica being pregnant, this is something I realized too with my other kids, but I really, really am grasping it now. As a mother, you know, moms have this unique thing that they get to experience, which is they obviously have the baby inside of them and they bond with the baby way before dads do, or in a very different way. She's every day walking around carrying the baby and feeling the baby move all the time. If there's a loud noise, the baby jumps in her belly and she can feel it. And so she talks to the baby and whatever. To me, even though I have kids and I know what to expect, I mean, I have a bond, but it's so much more abstract, you know? So I'm watching her develop this bond with the baby, and there's a part of me that's envious, like, oh man, I wish I could experience some of that. And I know what happened to me with my kids. As soon as they were born, it hit me like a truck. I remember it was like they were born, and then it just, everything hit me all at once. I'm like, holy shit, there's this kid, it's mine.
Yeah.
Wow, this
right.
is... But, you know, to experience that process, as difficult as it is, it's an amazing thing to watch, and it's something that we'll never experience.
You bring up something, too, that I thought is interesting. So I remember, I totally recall that, right? And that was just not that long ago for me. And I remember after he was born, something that I felt very appreciative of was Katrina really allowed me to take him a lot. Because sometimes moms can get really clingy right out the gates because they have built that bond. Also, a lot of times dads get scared.
Yeah, and sometimes dads are scared.
Right. Dads are scared. As soon as they grab him, he cries and they can't get him to calm down and sue them. And then as soon as mom gets a hold of him, he sues right away. So kind of dads a lot of times will be like, okay, let her handle this. I'll figure this out later type of deal. Where I kind of just like asserted myself right away and took him a lot and was able to soothe him and now make up for the 9 months that she had with him. I kind of got to do in the first, you know, 3 to 4 months a lot with him, and I really feel that there's a difference with my relationship with him now that he's older because I did that.
Dude, the bonding that happens with the skin on skin contact and then them regulating their breathing with your breathing in those initial weeks is actually extremely,
it's like an imprint.
Very, very important. You know, you talk to midwives and they take the baby out and they don't do anything. They put the baby right on you.
Yeah.
As long as everything's okay, right? Baby goes right on you, skin to skin. And they say for the first week, they tell the mom, you're not going to do much but this. Baby's feeding and laying on you and skin to skin, which, by the way, I just learned this the other day. If they recommend that, and this comes from midwives, and midwives are experts at delivering babies. They're the people you want to talk to. They said that when a mom first has a baby, to not get up and walk around much at all for the first week or two, because if they do, they just obviously went through a very difficult, you know, labor is a difficult on the body. It's challenging on the body. The pelvic floor muscles, when you're standing and moving and walking or whatever, gravity can make them fall or collapse or weaken. So they recommend laying down a lot for the first week and allowing those, because otherwise you're vulnerable to things like prolapse and other interesting things that can happen with the pelvic floor muscles. And you hear this from a lot of, you know, when I would train clients later on, I learned some of these movements and exercises because, you know, these are things that women sometimes are embarrassed to talk about, but after having a baby, you know, they can't do jumping jacks because they you know, they might, you know, pee a little bit or lose some of that control. I did not know that. So for the week or two afterwards, don't do anything at all and lay down. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, I want to thank you for bringing the meat sticks finally. You weren't lying. You didn't eat them all. I thought they were.
No. Not only did I bring them, but I also reached out to Shauna and had them send another box. So like you guys, we should be fine for quite some time.
For at least a day.
You know, speaking of the beef sticks, is that something that Jessica will eat right now or no?
Yes.
She will eat those right now.
Yes.
So they're a great source of protein.
Well, you know, if you ever eat like jerky or meat sticks or things that, you know, can store for a while, convenient. First off, the quality is typically not good, but they're always dry. Mm-hmm. They're always really dry.
Well, I mean, that was our biggest. Okay, we were hunting for, I mean, all of us are fans of beef jerky. Okay, there's no There's no surprise in that. And we had gone through, what, I think three other companies that we had send stuff
over. But they were all dry. Yeah. They didn't taste good.
None of them I was excited about.
No flavor.
None of them tasted good. And here's what's hard. It's not only the points that you make, but then also grass-fed, too.
Yeah.
It's like we talk about with ButcherBox all the time. What was so rare about that company was, you know, for a grass-fed beef, for it to taste so good. The same thing goes for beef jerky. Finding a healthier choice of beef jerky that taste amazing also is
that's the best snack for kids. You want to give your kids a snack, you know, that they could.
My kids love the jalapeno ones, which is surprising.
That's my favorite.
Really?
I like the summer sausage.
That's my least favorite.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, give them all to me.
No, original teriyaki or jalapeno are my go-to, but I'm not a fan of the summer sausage. Wow, good. You eat all those. Leave the jalapeno ones for me.
Justin loves that good old summer sausage.
Bring it on, man.
MAPS Anabolic. If you're looking to maximize your overall muscle and strength, MAPS Anabolic is the perfect place to start. With a full 30-day money-back guarantee, there is absolutely zero risk. So what are you waiting for? Go to mindpumpmedia.com and get started today.
It's the motherfucking Quaw.
The eagle has landed.
Quee-quaw. First question is from Mitch Pappas. In a full body routine, would you recommend sticking to the standard compound lifts on each day, or would it be more beneficial to have variations each day? For example, barbell back squat day 1, barbell front squat day 2, goblet squat day 3, and so on.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, that's how we've built our most of our programs are built like that. And we talked about this recently, right? We've talked about, you know, the benefits of running a full body routine is that those exercises end up being the type of exercises that you choose for your full body routine. Versus if you did legs all in one workout, very few people are going to go back squat, front squat, goblet squat.
Right.
It would just tax the shit out of
you. And if they did, they would lose their effectiveness, because by the time you got to the second or third exercise,
yes,
you were totally gassed.
That is one of the great benefits of programming full body, is that you've got three, you know, phenomenal exercises.
Powerhouse exercises you sprinkle in there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, there's one exception. I would say this. If you're somebody who's learning how to squat properly, then I think you should just do back squats each time you work out. Practice back squats each time you work out and get really, really good at them before you throw in a lot of these, you know, different kinds of variations. So when I would train clients and, you know, once I got their mobility to the point where we could do a back squat, we would only do back squats at least 2 days a week. And if I trained them 3 days a week, sometimes all the days that I trained them, for maybe a few months until I saw their back squats look really, really good, solid and strong, then I would bring in a front squat or a goblet squat or a Bulgarian split stance.
Well, that's the beauty of back squats and front squats, especially because they're so high skill based. You can still get a tremendous amount of value of consistently repeating those exercises for an extended period of time. Versus if that question was asked about leg pressing and you were leg pressing 3 days a week, I would see there's a lot less value in that because it's not as high skill level.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think it all depends on what level you are in terms of your familiarity with those types of exercises. Like if you do need like some time learning and developing the skill of front squatting, I would focus primarily on that for a few weeks, like if not 4 to 5 weeks of just like trying to nail it down, and then, you know, start mixing it up and putting them all like in succession.
My favorite combination for me, and it built a lot of muscle and a lot of strength, not perfect, so you don't do this forever, but it was a very effective combination, was barbell squats on one workout, front squats on another workout, and then traditional deadlifts on the third workout. So every week I was doing those movements, and they're similar enough to where I'm hitting the body, most of those body parts, with a little bit of frequency, but they're different enough to where the skill is different and I would get, you know, different results from them.
Yeah, I like adding in some sort of a unilateral movement, like a Bulgarian split squat or doing like a lunge in there. I think that there's a lot of value to that, because that's just a single leg squat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's definitely up there with, you know, top five leg exercises. Goblet squats to me are a little similar to front squats. You can't load it as much.
those apply more to me for a client that I'm using that for a particular reason, right? They have a hard time loading the bar.
They can't put it on their shoulders.
They have more of a forward lean when they squat. They don't break 90. So I really enjoy using goblet squats for that. Otherwise, that movement is so close to front squats that I would use something else instead of the goblet squat in the place that he's recommending.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't use goblet squats as much. Two is like Zercher squats too as well.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, which would be a good option.
Second question is from Madison Fishy. You guys frequently mention consuming 0.8 to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight and mostly from meat for its muscle building effects and satiating factors. However, we know from data from the Blue Zones, longevity comes from lower protein intake, and many of these people don't resistance train. What about higher meat-based protein diets for longevity and for individuals who don't train?
I love questions like this. All right, here's the problem with the observation that low protein is best for longevity or any singular factor that you may see in some of these Blue Zones. These people live a long time because of the combination of all of the things that they do. Like they made the mention that they don't resistance train. Okay, follow them along throughout their day, and what you'll find is a lot of general activity, hiking, swimming, rowing.
And they're usually along the equator where they get a lot of sun, vitamin D.
And not to mention, what we don't know is if they were to resistance train 1 to 3 times a week, how much better and healthier would they be?
Right. That's the other thing. Like, would they benefit from doing a little bit of resistance training? Would it be even better for them? I would say absolutely. Here's the other thing. They're not just low protein. They're low calorie. All of these people in these Blue Zones, one thing they all had in common is they just didn't eat a lot of food.
They didn't overconsume.
Now, it is true that eating a low-calorie diet in combination with a healthy lifestyle probably adds to longevity, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're somebody that also wants life quality, and quality of life means having a little bit more strength, a little bit more muscle, then I see that as, you know, include that in the whole answer for yourself. Because it's not just about living longer, it's also about living better. What does that mean for you? Like, for example, never eating birthday cake ever, you'll probably live longer. But are you going to live better if you avoid eating the cake at your kid's birthday or maybe something that you enjoy making with family members or whatever? Throwing those thing in, throwing all of those things in also adds, you know, quality.
Well, also consider this. Or, you know, if you were somebody who lived in a Blue Zone or lived a lifestyle like that, and what comes to mind is, like, you know, the family that, like, literally lives on a farm and produces everything they eat. The amount of, you know, lifting hay and stacking boxes and, you know, pushing plows and, like,
you don't need to work out.
Right, exactly. This person is getting a workout every single day. The food choices that they're making are whole foods. They're eating in a calorie deficit compared to how much they're burning with all their activity. Like, hell yes. If that's you, if you're asking this question, you live on the farm, you're growing all your food, you're doing all this stuff, skip working out and skip eating, you know, 0.8 to 1 gram per week. You'll be fine and you'll live probably a very long life. But the reality is that's not 90% of the people listening to this podcast right now. In fact, 90% of you listening right now are probably fucking doing it sitting down. Sitting down in a car, sitting down in a computer, in your desk. Maybe the other 10% are walking on a treadmill or exercising and listening to us. But most of us live a very sedentary lifestyle. We live nothing like a Blue Zone. So to cherry pick some of the data to use that as an example of, like, maybe how we should live our lives.
Yeah, you can't do that.
It's tough.
No, you know, you can't do that. And here's the other thing too. Now there are societies and cultures that people have studied that eat a higher protein diet that do have exceptional health, but they're also low calorie. Because here's the problem: if you look at all the countries in the world that ate a lot of protein, you're also looking at, generally speaking, all the countries in the world that eat a lot of calories. So Americans eat a lot of protein in comparison to Blue Zone countries, but they also just eat a lot of everything.
Yeah.
We eat more fat, we eat more carbs.
Throw everything in there.
We eat way more just calories in general. So that's one of the big things. Now, I do have a hack for this. Let's say you are somebody that's, you know, you want to build muscle, you like eating a high-protein diet, like the way it makes you feel, the way it makes you look, but you do identify that there may be some longevity benefits to eating a low-calorie diet. You can actually get some of those benefits by fasting occasionally.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So maybe you normally do eat a high-protein diet. You're trying to build muscle, build strength. But maybe once every other month, you do a 48 or 72-hour fast. You're going to reap a lot of the benefits just from doing that.
I think there's – sorry to interrupt you. No but problem. I mean to this point you're saying right now, and I believe our good friend Ben Pakulski recommends this. You could – protein fast.
Yeah.
If you want,
you can go low protein for a week.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even a day. Well, I think he recommends it once a week for a day.
Mm.
Once a week for a day, go protein fast. There's nothing wrong with that. And the same benefits that we're seeing that the people in the blue zones are getting from this, you'll reap those similar benefits by just either doing what Sal's saying, which is, you know, every other month doing a massive, you know, 2-day or 48-hour type of 48-hour, 72-hour fast from all foods, or simply choosing every other week or once a week doing a protein fast, and you used to do this a lot, and you introduced me to it. I did it occasional all vegan diet day where you eat that way. So there's lots of values and ways for you to get these similar benefits of a lot of the research that we see between these people that are on low calorie diets, low protein, low everything. Well, that's what fasting is all about.
Next question is from Mason Hartsock. For trainers who have no interest in online training, what are the best next steps to survive and thrive as we progress away from lockdown and gyms begin opening again?
Oh boy.
Can we address the question first? Like, I find it really interesting that that somebody would ask a question and be like, you know, for someone who does not want to do that, like, I'm going to take a hard stand. Listen, I didn't want to do that. I loved personal training in person. I like the real interaction with real people.
It doesn't get much better than that.
It doesn't. It's more enjoyable. I think there's lots of benefits to it. But because you don't like it, to ignore the evolution of what's happening right in front of your eyes, I think is a bad idea. And it doesn't necessarily mean that I think you have to go from being an online trainer because of COVID, now all of a sudden you decide you're going to be a virtual trainer completely. That's not what I mean by that. But there are some simple things that if I were to advise you to become a virtual trainer, that I would also tell you some steps to take, and that would be to build a virtual presence,
mm-hmm.
right? There's a tremendous amount of value for you, even if you continue to build an in-person business, to creating content that lives in the virtual world.
Mm-hmm.
So building a YouTube channel, building a Facebook page, building an Instagram page, writing blogs, writing free white papers and guides, creating things like that is only going to support your in-person business. Meanwhile, it also protects you in case that completely disappears or gets reduced from, you know, X amount percentage of population down to, you know, 50% less than that. So I think instead of resisting ever becoming a virtual trainer or thinking like that, you should build your current model as if you were going to protect yourself and also support your in-person business. That would be my advice.
I remember even, and this is way before all this stuff went down, where, you know, virtual training was a lot more prevalent and like it's really necessary right now. I was looking at it as a way of systematizing my business and figuring out the way that I do everything and being able to duplicate that and be able to hand that off and look at it more of like I'm running this business to then, you know, have the availability to step away from my business and pass on my business to somebody else. That's just a smart way to look at any business.
Well, one of the most beautiful things that has happened from this, and I get this sometimes, like I have some friends that still don't understand Mind Pump. They don't listen, whatever, but they're like, you know, they're starting to hear the success. They know somebody else who listens, and that's like, oh my God, like so-and-so knows your podcast and this and that. And, you know, and now they're asking like, well, what if like, what happens when you reach all the fitness people and they've either bought your program or not, and like, you guys aren't making any money, like what would you do or how are you going to handle that? And it's like, what's beautiful is we all could always fall back on training people in person. Mm. And it would be easier now than it's ever been in our entire life.
Oh, because we have a huge online presence.
Yes, because we've built a network of people that we've provided a ton of free, valuable, virtual information to. that if one day we all said, okay, Mind Pump Instagram or Mind Pump podcast is shutting down, but Sal, Justin, and Adam are opening their availability to train clients in person, who would like to sign up? I don't think that any of us would have a problem actually making that pivot at all. And it protects us if we were ever to do that.
Here's something to also consider for the current market. So I could see this being an opportunity for trainers who like to train people in person. You heard us earlier talking about schools and how there's micro schooling and homeschooling is going on like crazy. And people, and again, California, they're shutting gyms down. There's still a demand for fitness, but I think that there may be an opportunity to deliver it to people's homes. I believe when people are doing this micro schooling thing, they're going to still want an activity or exercise, you know, portion. And these people may also hire tutors to help with their kids. Why not hire a trainer to show up once or twice a week?
Do their physical education.
Do the physical training for the kids.
And who better to do it than some PE teacher?
Than a personal trainer.
Right.
Right. Or to take the whole family through a workout.
What a great point.
Or to advertise that you'll go to people's homes and you take all the safety precautions. You wear a mask. You stay, you know, at a distance from your client. You bring your own equipment. It's all sanitized.
Exactly.
And they work out and you do it outdoors and you go from home to home. That's a market that was difficult to penetrate before for trainers.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a much more open market now.
Yeah. And you factor in your travel, you know, and all that kind of stuff in terms of like, I mean, I actually ran a business very similar to that towards the end of my career, just because my whole goal was to be able to provide, I could basically fit any sort of schedule. Like, I'm going to find my way in there. And so a lot of times that meant me having to actually physically be at their work or at their home. And you really don't need a whole lot of equipment, not a big investment for you to have within your vehicle. And then bringing that in, you can provide them like great workouts. So it's ripe for that for sure.
Next question is from Netflix and Rachel. How can I fix my anterior tilt?
Okay, so she is referring to an anterior pelvic tilt. Now, for those of you who don't know what that means, imagine looking at someone from a side view. This is where the lower back arches and the butt kind of sticks out and the belly kind of comes forward, okay? This is a common posture issue that you see in people in modern societies, mainly because we do a lot of sitting and we don't have good core strength. So this posture starts to appear because your hip flexors start to tighten up to try to support your core.
Start worrying about back pain specifically.
Yeah, back pain, hip pain. Wearing high heels encourages this type of posture. So if you wear a lot of heels, you'll start to get this posture. And so it doesn't feel good. And then if you go to exercise and barbell squat or deadlift or anything else that involves low back stability, you know, it can cause a lot of problems. So in order to fix it, you want to strengthen the opposing, you know, movement pattern, if you will. One great exercise, first off, you got to strengthen your core. Everybody who understands anterior pelvic tilt will tell you to strengthen your core. But the problem with just saying that is people who have tight hip flexors and weak cores can go do sit-ups and leg raises and all these ab exercises, and they can perform them and not get good core strength because they don't realize that their hip flexors are doing all of the work.
Or they're reinforcing the problem because they keep using that same muscle group.
And that's right. In fact, they make things worse. So strengthen your core, but learn how to strengthen your core. On our YouTube channel, there's a movement called hip flexor deactivators. Check that out. I teach you how to deactivate the hip flexors and then activate the core muscle so that you can start to separate the two and strengthen the core to kind of help offset that posture.
Well, this is another example of this answer lies for sure in the Mind Pump TV channel on YouTube. In fact, Serene just did a video. The latest video that has gone up on that channel is, pelvic clockwise. I forget the title of it, but it will definitely help with this issue. The number one downloaded video or viewed video on there is the 3 best secrets to build a better butt. I actually address this in that and with floor bridges, and I talk about this. So even though
floor bridges are great.
Even though anterior pelvic tilt is not in the title, the movements and the priming that I talk about to build a butt, because a lot of times this is what happens when somebody has an anterior pelvic tilt, it shifts the weight over into their quads and like their hip flexors, like Sal's alluding to why you want to do hip flexor deactivators. And then when you go into like a squat, a lunge, or any leg or butt type of exercise, they end up developing or feeling most of it in the quads and not the butt where they want. So the video that I did on the butt is really addressing why it's so valuable. Is it's addressing anterior pelvic tilt, which many, many people suffer from, and why that's so important if you then want to develop a butt, because you first have to address the anterior pelvic tilt, get the glutes firing properly, and then what types of exercises to support that. And then in conjunction with that, what Sal is talking about building the core and supporting that, all of that together is what's going to fix the anterior pelvic tilt and then pelvic tilt, and then also help build your glutes or posterior.
Yeah, another great one is our wall test, really just to gain access to the TVA again. And so it really, like, a lot of times, like with the anterior pelvic tilt, you lose that access to core muscles that are vital in stabilizing your spine. And so that's why a lot of these pains persist, because you have to be able to distribute that force somewhere. And so a lot of times it stops in inconvenient places where your body like takes on a lot of that stress and creates this pain.
And isn't that, Doug, they can still access that webinar that Justin did for Prime, right? That's in that webinar.
Yeah, mapsprimewebinar.com.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, it's by far the most, if I did an assessment on a new client, I could pretty much guarantee that I would see anterior pelvic tilt and forward shoulder. It's like so common. I would say 8 or 9 out of 10 people
for sure.
Yep. Have that issue. And here's the thing with these posture deviations. Your body moves in the direction that your muscles dictate. So if there's muscles that are weak or tight or constantly in a mild state of tonus or slightly tensed all the time or lax and not connecting very well, your posture would just follow that. And then what happens over time, if you don't fix it, is it gets worse and worse and worse. And the way you fix it is by strengthening the muscles that need to be strengthened. You cannot fix this problem with belts and, braces and things that will hold you in position. That's only going to cause the issue to get worse. Look, Mind Pump is recorded on video as well as audio. What's up, everybody at YouTube? Come check us out, Mind Pump Podcast. You can also find us all on Instagram. Justin's at Mind Pump Justin.
You know this.
I'm at Mind Pump Sal, and Adam's at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.